Good evening, and thank you for joining me tonight for part two of our series about Sfiras HaOmer as the preparation for Shavuos and for three crucial components that we are discussing over these three nights. And tonight is both an especially appropriate time and also a somewhat awkward time to talk about it. It's especially appropriate because tonight is a turning point in Sfiras HaOmer. It is a time when Sfira takes on a special tone, a different message, but it's also an awkward time because this particular hour is a time when I personally have not yet counted the Sfira, and therefore I want to avoid actually using the label of this occasion because that may count as a performance of the mitzvah, which I'd rather wait till I can recite a bracha a little bit later on. So that's the point we'll also return to. But it all surrounds this fact that tonight is a significant turning point in the period of Sfiras HaOmer. And it's a time when, for many, the mourning observances that are associated with Sfira stop. And that is associated with an idea that we find in the Gemara and Maseches Yevamos, which is most likely the basis for the mourning periods that are associated with this time. The Talmud tells us that during this period between Pesach and Shavuos, thousands of students of Rabbi Akiva died. It's a theme which is particularly resonant for us right now as we're reeling from the effects of a horrible magefa. So here the Talmud tells us that this was a time of year when there were terrible losses among the Jewish people, and those losses stopped on this day at this point of the Omer, and therefore that day is considered significant, and for many that's when the mourning observances stop. So the idea that Rabbi Akiva's students die during this time is so hard to bear and to think about, but it's particularly baffling that the Talmud tells us that the cause of what happened to them was al shelo nahagu kavod ze lazeh, that they didn't show respect to each other. And that's very hard to understand, very hard to absorb as a concept. How could that be that Torah scholars wouldn't treat each other with respect? And of all things, the students of Rabbi Akiva, who highlighted the idea of Yahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, love your fellow as yourself. And he told us, Zeh Klal Godol BaTorah, this is a crucial, not just a crucial mitzvah, but a crucial klal, a crucial principle in the Torah from which so much else is derived, as the Sefer Achinuch explains that phrase. How could it be that his students would be lacking in this crucial aspect of treating each other with respect? And it is indeed a very troubling idea. And perhaps we can get a little perspective, perhaps homiletically, from looking at the halachos of Sfiras HaOmer, that the mitzvah to count the Omer, which is what we find in the Parsha, last week's Parsha in Parshas Emor, the Torah does not tell us that Sfiras HaOmer is a time period associated with mourning, but it does give us the mitzvah to count the days of the Omer. And there is a halacha that we observe that is very challenging for us absent-minded and somewhat distracted people, that there is a halacha which we practice in deference to the position of the Bahag, one of the great Rishonim, who's quoted in Tosfos in a few places. The Bahag maintained that if in the course of Sfira we forget to count even one day, so then there is something flawed in our mitzvah, and we are no longer a full participant in that mitzvah from that day on. And he draws upon the language of Tamimos that's found in Parshas Emor, of completeness, of perfection. And this position is accepted into our practice, at least as something we factor in, at least as something we're concerned about. And therefore, if we do miss a day of Sfira, which is even harder nowadays, usually we're able to go to shul and we daven Ma'ariv in shul. They remind us now if we're not able to daven in shul, it's even extra challenging. If we forget a day, then we no longer continue counting, at least with a bracha, count without a bracha, in deference to this view of the Bahag. So what exactly is the basis for this idea? Why should it be that if we miss one day, then we're no longer allowed to proceed, at least as full participants? So one explanation that many achrona, that many of the commentaries favored, expressed by the Prima Gaudim and others, is the idea that Sfiras HaOmer, even though we have 49 iterations, even though we have a count every night with its own bracha, but really it's all part of one package. It's all part of one idea, one mitzvah that has 49 iterations. And therefore, if there's anything missing, so then it's as if there's a hole in the balloon. It's as if everything is defective. And therefore, the mitzvah is no longer able to be performed in its optimal fashion, or perhaps even not at all. And the other Rishonim, who did not have this chumrah, who didn't have this stringency to say that missing one day removes you from the count, so it must be that these other Rishonim didn't agree, and they felt that Sfiras HaOmer is actually 49 distinct obligations, and that's why we have 49 brachos recited, because it's not to be viewed all as one package, each one is separate, and therefore, if you miss one day, it shouldn't affect the day after. So that is one view of why it is that we have this stringency. Rav Soloveitchik had a very different perspective. Rav Soloveitchik understood it in a completely different way, which actually revolutionized the whole understanding of this mitzvah and of many of the halachic questions that are relevant. And he suggested that perhaps we should view the days of Sfira not as one big package, but indeed as 49 separate days. And if that's the case, so then the question comes back, so why should one day affect the other? Why should it matter if I miss a day? If the next day is a new mitzvah, is a new obligation, I should be able to count from that new day, regardless of what I missed the day before. And to that, he explained that the issue is that even though they are distinct and separate, but it goes to the definition of counting, that when one counts items, so even though those items are distinct and separate, it's only meaningful to count them if we keep track of all the parts along the way. So if I have a number of items and I'm counting them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it only makes sense because I counted all of the parts. If I were to count skipping numbers, 1, 5, 7, 11, 22, so then that wouldn't be called counting. That would only be called saying numbers. In order for it to actually be considered a mitzvah of counting, I have to acknowledge all of the pieces along the way. And that's what creates the mitzvah rather than simply a statement of numbers, and keeping track is required in the mitzvah, and therefore we have to actually count all the parts beforehand. So Rav Soloveitchik's explanation, which Lubavitcher Rebbe had a similar approach, and a few others had a similar approach, but it was certainly radically different than the classical approach, and that affects our understanding of a number of halachic questions. So, for example, one issue that the Minchas Chinuch made popular, that he brought to everyone's attention, was the question of what about a bar mitzvah boy who would become an adult in the middle of Sfiras HaOmer? So would such a new adult, would he be able to join the Sfira in between? So if we say that if you don't count days along the way, then the mitzvah is incomplete, and you're not able to skip days and then pick up from a missed day, so then maybe the same should be said about a bar mitzvah boy who becomes an adult in the middle of Sfira, or somebody who converts to Judaism in the middle of Sfira. Perhaps we should say it's impossible to start in the middle, that if you don't have all the days, so then the mitzvah is incomplete. So this was a question that was posed by the Menchas Chinuch, and there are many different approaches to how to deal with that, which is a question that comes up for many people whose birthdays are this time of year, at least for that 1 year of becoming an adult. So Rav Soloveitchik suggested that perhaps the approach could be that if the bar mitzvah boy had been counting from Pesach on, even though he wasn't obligated in mitzvos and it wasn't an actual commandment, then once he becomes an adult, he can continue counting from that point on. And he explained that the issue is not that the mitzvah requires all the parts, because if that were the case, before he was obligated in mitzvos, he wouldn't be able to pick up from that point on. But because that's not the issue, the issue is making the count meaningful by acknowledging all the parts before. And that when one says tonight is five, it's meaningful because it's coming after 4, 3, 2, and 1. So therefore, if the bar mitzvah boy was keeping track the whole time, even though he wasn't obligated, or if the potential convert had been keeping track the whole time and then converted in the middle, even though it was before he was obligated in mitzvos, that would allow that individual to pick up from that point because the count is still meaningful, having acknowledged all the parts from before. And perhaps homiletically, we can understand that this gives us a little bit of perspective as to what Sfiras HaOmer is saying to us as we count down to Shavuos. That here we are looking excitedly towards the time of receiving the Torah. And last week we spoke about that, about how excitement and enthusiasm for the Torah is such a crucial aspect of what Shavuos is meant to do for us. And we count towards Shavuos to cultivate that excitement within us. But it's also crucial that we don't make a misstep in how we do this, that as we look towards the prize of the receiving of the Torah, as we look with eagerness and enthusiasm and excitement towards this unbelievable moment, that we don't make the mistake of thinking that whatever is in between, whatever is along the way, doesn't matter. And that instead, we have to recognize that every part matters, every part is significant, every part contributes to the whole. And if we were to skip steps and just look towards the prize, just look towards the goal, then that would be a crucial error. And Sfira reminds us that that's necessary, that we take note of every step along the way. And so too, perhaps with that mentality, that can help us understand how to relate to the story of Rabbi Akiva's students. So baffling. How could it be that the students of this great teacher, of V'ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, could not show proper respect to each other? Remember, my father, Zichrono Livracha, was always so troubled by this. It caused him pain. How could it be that the students of Torah would not treat each other respectfully? And he was fond of an interpretation that's brought by Rabbi Elazar Levi, quoting from Rav Shri Ragon in a Sefer, Levi Sefer Yesodos HaTefillah. He quotes from Rav Shri Ragon an idea that the Gemara is actually conveying a story here in code. And actually, the story was that the students of Rabbi Akiva were soldiers in the Bar Kokhba rebellion, and they died in battle. And the Gemara is actually telling us the opposite, that they did show kavod to each other. So that could be, but one way or another, the message of the Gemara here is that we need to show kavod to each other. We need to show respect to each other. And that's expressed especially in the Bereishis Rabbah, where you find this story also. And it makes the point that that's the message of the Gemara one way or another. The Bereishis Rabbah says that, therefore, as a result of this event, we should commit ourselves to making sure to treat each other with respect. So whether the Talmud is telling us that they didn't or they did, one way or another, that seems to be the message of the story, that this is a time when we have to remember to treat each other with respect. And sometimes it's possible to miss the point. We might think, okay, you're on your way to Rabbi Akiva's shir. It's the most glorious experience. It's like receiving the Torah on a daily basis. It's phenomenal and it's a spiritual high. And perhaps one might think that, okay, if I'm on my way to that, so it doesn't matter if somebody's in my way. It doesn't matter if I have to push somebody aside, if I have to ignore the needs of what's between here and there, because I'm focused on something so important. How can I be expected to pay attention to everything that's in my way? And that's the mistake here. Sfiras HaOmer reminds us that if we are to receive the Torah properly, so then we indeed have to pay attention and be aware of everyone's needs that we encounter as we pursue that goal. There was once a study, an experiment that was carried out in the Princeton Theological Seminary in 1973. They did an experiment with a number of seminary students, and they told them that they have to give a lecture on the theme of Chesed, on the theme of the Good Samaritan, which is one of their stories of somebody helping out somebody in need. And they told them that the lecture is going to be in that building across campus, and they have to go because they're late. They have to hurry to get there. So they went, the students, to go deliver their lecture on this topic of helping people in need. And along the way, there were actors, there were people who were a part of this experiment, and they pretended to be in distress. And they were people who these students passed on the way to give the lecture about helping people in distress. And a very high percentage of these students, so focused on addressing the public about this topic, neglected to notice the people who actually needed help along the way. And perhaps that's a part of the message here, that as we keep our eye on the prize and as we look towards this wonderful goal, we can't let ourselves forget that the obligation towards those who actually need our help, who actually give us an opportunity to express the values of what it is we're learning, that has to be attended to. I remember once overhearing a conversation between two students where one was asking the other during this time of Sfiras HaOmer, one was reflecting the practice that the yeshivas have, that many others have, not to shave during the days of Sfira. So one asked the other student, how come you're shaving during these days of Sfira? And the student responded, I look silly when I don't shave. And the first student said to him, you look silly all the time. I couldn't believe hearing this, that they can hear the whole point of the mourning over Sfiras HaOmer of this period is to develop the proper sense of honor and respect for each other, and for someone to excoriate his friend and saying, how come you're not observing the practices of Sfira, and then speak to him in a disrespectful way, is again missing the whole point of the message. And that's something that's possible to do. It's possible to have such a focus on what you're looking towards that you miss the point of the message and you miss all the details that make that message meaningful. And it's fascinating that on Shavuos we read Megillas Rus, and Megillas Rus is portrayed in a certain way in the Medrash and Rus Rabbah, where Rav Zeira is quoted and he says, what is the nature of Megillas Rus? It doesn't have any halachas in it. It doesn't teach us tumah or tara. It doesn't teach us purity or impurity. It doesn't teach us heter and iser. It doesn't teach us what's right and what's wrong. So lama nichtava, why was Megillas Rus written? And then he goes on to explain, it says it's there in order to teach us the reward of gomlei chesed, of those who engage in acts of kindness and acts of chesed, of caring for each other. That's what Megillas Rus exists in order to teach us. And it's a surprising statement on many levels. And Mordechai Tzvi Kalbach in the Sefer Mashke L'Shlomo notes that, first of all, to say that there aren't any halachos in the Megillah of Rus is simply not the case. The rabbis throughout the Talmud derive many halachic details from looking at verses in the book of Rus, details regarding the laws of conversion, the laws of transaction, many, many areas of halacha, and the laws of yibum, the laws of levirate marriage, of the obligation of a man to marry his brother's widow if his brother passed away without children. And that itself makes the statement hard to understand. It's simply not the case that there aren't any halachic details that come from the book of Rus. And Rav Mordechai Tzvi Kalbach explained that the point is to call our attention to the nature of something that happens and much of the thrust of Megillas Rus. That yes, there is a incident of what's known as levirate marriage, of marrying someone in order to keep up the family legacy of the deceased individual. But if you look at the details of the story, you'll see that it's clear that this is not a situation where there was a mitzvah, where there was an obligation to do so. And that Boaz, who performs this act, is doing so out of a sense of devotion rather than a sense of obligation. And he notes that that is the message here, that when it comes to chesed, chesed is a unique kind of obligation. That on the one hand, it is just that, it's an obligation, it's a mitzvah in the Torah, at least in two different senses. We have an obligation of Yahavta L'Reyecha Kamocha, as we mentioned before, to love others as we do ourselves. And we have an obligation to imitate God, and God models chesed for us. And that's how we have to act. So it's an obligation, it's something that we must do. But at the same time, it's very hard to establish absolute parameters. And so much of genuine chesed comes not because of a sense of obligation, but because of a sense of kindness and a sense of recognition and sympathy for the needs of others. So therefore, its very nature builds on a sense of voluntarism, of appreciating what others need and being moved to act. And yet, it comes to us as an obligation. It's both an obligation and an act of voluntarism at the same time. It's something that at once is the law, is the halacha, and yet is also lifnim, is above and beyond as far as the halacha requires. It is a very unusual combination that requires us not to respond to it as an obligation, but rather to respond to it from a sense of connectedness, a sense of identifying with the other's needs, and recognizing that that motivates us to act and to perceive them that way. And this is something that is crucial if we are going to receive the Torah. So we know that the Torah was given to us as a joint entity, was given to us as Klal Yisrael. And there is an interesting note, the Pasuk in Parshas Yisro, connected with the receiving of the Torah at Har Sinai. So the Torah tells us that God instructed that the Jews should be told to be careful not to come too close and not to break through the boundary, because then something would happen to them. V'nafal mimenu rav, which sounds like it means that many may fall, many may get hurt because of coming too close. So there, Rashi seems to be picking up, as the Sifsei Chachamim notes, on a lack of agreement in the language, that nafal mimenu rav. Rav sounds like it means many people may fall. But nafal is a singular word. So how come it's phrased that way as a singular going into a plural? And Rashi cites the idea from the Mechilta that every individual is precious. So if even one individual would be lost, the nafal, even if only one would be lost, so then that would have the effect of rav, that would be equated to many, to the public as a whole, because every individual is a whole world and we have to relate to them that way. And again, this is something which resonates with us so powerfully now during this time of crisis, when we are doing everything we can to try to protect every life, to try to save every soul. This notion of seeing everyone as a whole world, as a whole population, is what animates so much of our decision making right now. And this is a crucial perspective as we reflect upon Kabbalah Satorah, that the receiving of the Torah is premised on our being able to perceive each other that way. And it's more well known, Rashi's comment on Vayichan, that when the Jews camped there, it's also phrased in the singular, and Rashi has the idea, Ke'ish Echad, B'Lev Echad, that they were as one person with one heart. And that's an idea that we're very proud about, and we're very proud of, and we sing songs about to highlight how we were in such a state of unity, and the Torah had to be given in that context. But it's also noteworthy that Rashi earlier in Sefer Shmos tells us about a similar phrasing when Paro's army was chasing the Jews, Kriyas Yamsuf. So Rashi has a comment there which sounds identical. And he writes there that the army was chasing them, B'lev Echad Ki Ish Echad. It's the same words, with one heart as one person. So what's so special about the Jews? Ki Ish Echad B'lev Echad, the same thing was said about Paro's army. And Rav Huttner has a comment where he notes that the order is crucial, that the Jews at Har Sinai were called Ke'ish Echad, B'lev Echad, while Paro's army was called B'lev Echad, Ke'ish Echad. And why is the ordering so significant? Because B'lev Echad, Ke'ish Echad, Paro's army, the phrasing indicates that they had one goal. They all wanted to chase after the Jews. So they were a b'lei v'chad, they had one goal. So therefore they came together, ke'ish echad, they were able to function, or they thought they'd be able to function as a very efficient army pursuing their joint goal. That's what you call an alliance. That's not really a sense of identification. That is a group coming together because they all have a common enemy, so they're able to pursue that as one. But by Har Sinai, we find the language the other way around. It's ke'isha chad v'lev chad, that because they had that sense of identity, so therefore they were all embracing the same project together, the Kabbalah Satorah together, because they perceived each other as a part of one whole. And that is crucial to the mentality of chesed, that we recognize that, yes, we're obligated to take care of each other, but we do so because we identify with the needs of each other. We recognize that your suffering is my suffering, and therefore the same way I would want to take care of you is a reflection of the fact that I would want to take care of myself, and I want to take care of you as an extension of myself. And perhaps that's also the message of the students of Rabbi Akiva, that Rabbi Akiva taught them V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, and they understood that, but they were focused so much on the great goal, the tremendous spiritual experience of the shir, of their daily Kabbalah Satorah. So perhaps they thought, okay, so I wouldn't care so much about it tripping along the way or anything else that happens because I'm so focused on this. So maybe the others around me, they're like me, they also don't care. But the obligation of V'ahavta l'recha kamocha doesn't only mean that you treat others the way you would want to be treated, and if you don't care, you assume they don't care either. But it's to identify with what their needs are and to recognize that what's important to them is also important to you, and their problems are also your problems, and you take that on through a sense of identity, as Reb Shaul Salanter famously commented, that other people's gashmius is my ruchnius, taking care of other people's physical needs is my spiritual needs. Make sure that I recognize that. So perhaps, yes, they had internalized V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, but their focus on this tremendous prize, receiving of the Torah that they got from Rabbi Akiva, allowed them to focus exclusively on that and to assume that everyone else also saw things that way. But we have to recognize that Kabbalah Satorah requires us truly to feel a sense of interconnectedness, to absorb the needs and the requirements that surround us, to make sure that on our way to receiving the Torah of Chesed, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us to receive the Torah because we are descendants of Avraham Avinu, who modeled Chesed. And at that point in Parshas Vayera, the Torah tells us that God recognizes that Avraham is a person who took care of the angels and brought them a lavish meal and had this attribute of imitating God through a awareness of the need to be of service, to be of chesed. And at that point, God declares that this is somebody who I love because he will pass that message on to his descendants. And it's because of that, that we are worthy to receive the Torah. So therefore, if that is indeed going to be the case, if we are going to reach the moment of Shavuos in a state of preparation, then we need to use this time of Sfiras HaOmer to make sure that we have honed that sense of identity to its greatest sharpness, that we have done everything we can to feel the identification with others and the necessity to come together as one whole, and particularly to celebrate this night, this moment, this oasis within the sphere and its significance, in order to help us remember what's truly important and what is a crucial part of the most important gift at all. So we look towards Shavuos with that awareness, and I look forward, God willing, to joining with you next week for part three of how we use the Sfira to prepare for Shavuos and how that affects the Yontif itself. I wish you a safe and healthy and uplifting week.